You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, joined today by a very special guest to talk about the NFL draft. We could think of no one better to talk about the Seahawks draft with us than Seahawks fan and the man behind the website 3SigmaAthlete.com with its ratings of athletic testing, Zach Whitman. Thanks for joining us, Zach.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
We're so excited to have you. And this is our annual Seahawks draft preview podcast. And do you want to explain kind of who you are and your work to our listener who may not be familiar?
Right. I do listen to the podcast, so maybe I am the listener, which in which case this becomes an entirely meta exercise that I'm a little uncomfortable with. But as I speak to myself here, I'm Zach Whitman, and I run the website 3 Sigma Athlete. I really got into writing the site, which is just basically athletic testing, combine stuff for NFL prospects in grad school when I was bummed out with grad school and wanted something else to do to kind of take my attention and distract myself from grad school.
Where were you at grad school, by the way?
I went to the wonderful University of Washington in Seattle.
All right. Yeah.
Undergrad and grad school. So I was there for a long time. But yeah, it was a really fun thing to do there. And we had the guys at Field Goals who were really into it. And so I kind of just got my start writing that first year in 2014 about the draft. And yeah, it's been fun since. I guess this is my fourth year doing it. And I pretty much publish rankings at this point. In past years, I've done a lot more writing. But this year, it's mostly just the ratings at 3 Sigma. And then, you know, snarky tweets about various prospects when I find a mood.
How did you get into Spark in particular? What was your introduction to that?
Yeah, so Spark was a thing. I'm sure everyone's familiar with fieldgoals.com. And 3 or 4 years ago, Danny Kelly and Davis Sue over there started really diving into it because somebody had gone to like some Pete Carroll seminar thing. And Pete had talked briefly about it. And then in some interviews, he and John Schneider had talked about overall, you know, like this guy was the sixth best tester in the class and just kind of some breadcrumbs. And so through that, they talked to some people who had known Pete at USC and kind of found that it was a Spark type metric, at least the Seahawks were using. So from there, I really didn't know what it was, but I was a reader of fieldgoals.com. So I looked at it, and apparently Spark was some metric they had used to measure high school students for these essentially kind of like high school combines. And
Nike was the developer, right?
Well, it's a little convoluted. I've had people from the original Spark reach out to me. Apparently, there was some Spark hive mind of people unaffiliated with Nike at the start who kind of came up with it and were just a bunch of medical sports science people. And then very quickly, Nike bought the rights to what they did, and they carried on with them for I think 8 or 9 years. I think they started around 2004, 2005. And really, those guys were at Nike till maybe 2013 or so. And most of them now work for the Seahawks, or at least I think three or four. Yeah, several of them now do. The Seahawks have a pretty robust sports science department. And I know several of the people involved. And now, again, it's kind of hard to track the origins of this. So I don't know if these are the people who were there at the very start in 02, 03 or whatever it was. But certainly a lot of the people who worked on the project are now or at least a year or so ago, working for the Seahawks, doing something there in Renton. So, yeah, I mean, there was the metric, and I looked online, and there was a gigantic database for the 2012 high school class, enough data that really you could start to formulate a back calculation on it. It's a pretty complicated formula. It's pretty nonlinear and has, you know, a lot of variables, but given, you know, 20,000 or 30,000, whatever it was, data points, it does become possible to kind of brute force a back calculation and figure out pretty much how it worked. And so from there, it was trying to analyze what we knew about Seahawks, what they had done, their actions they had done in the draft and in free agency, undrafted free agency, and try to figure out, you know, is this something they're kind of paying attention to? What does it mean? And that was a really fun first year because it was kind of, you know, me, Davis, Danny, other people at Field Goals trying to kind of dive into it and understand, like, Is this something they care about? Does it matter? That was probably the most fun we had during the Spark kind of experiment.
But really quickly, can you talk about some of the main elements that go into making a Spark score?
Yeah, so Spark being a high school thing is not directly analogous, and the tests are not directly correlated to the Combine, but they're fairly similar. So Spark, the initial version, at least that they came up with in the mid-2000s, had the 40-yard dash, which I think everyone's fairly familiar with from like the pictures of Tom Brady having a slow one and John Ross having a fast one.
Rich Eisen running it in
his
suit.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So we know that. We don't see Rich run a jump a vertical every year, but there's also the vertical. There was a really cool test called the Powerball Throw, which is probably the best test of all of them and the only one that is not included at the Combine, which was you get on your knees and you have a giant medicine ball and you have to kind of rock back and forth with your core and throw the ball. And it's a really good test. It shows balance, flexibility, and core strength. And it really is the one that would probably provide us a fair bit of information at the Combine that they don't do because of kind of historical precedent. And then they also had the short shuttle and bench press. The short shuttle being an agility drill, and the bench press, again, I think we are all familiar with that at least somewhat. I personally can't put up 20 reps, you know, at 225, but I'm sure that one of your listener can. So
there we go. You're getting it now. Yeah. I was going to say, I can imagine they don't do the drill with the medicine ball, but Kevin King could probably throw it 100 yards.
Yes. Well, yes. Over those mountains.
All right. So you mentioned sort of looking at the Seahawks and, you know, trying to deduce the clues in terms of how they were using this. What were the conclusions you found? And then how about other NFL teams?
Yeah, it was interesting. And that's changed through time. So it's kind of a complicated answer. But when we looked at it in 2014, we had for Schneider and Carroll, we had the 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013 drafts at that point. And what we really saw was a pretty significant correlation between athleticism and the way they, you know, made decisions, and specifically in relation to other teams, right? Because if, you know, it's one thing if they're taking a bunch of athletic guys, but if every team in the league is taking the same players, then it really doesn't mean anything. But you started to see specifically in 2012 was probably the biggest case of this. They always throughout everything took athletes, especially in like undrafted free agency, late in the draft. They always were really big believers in kind of taking a shot. But in 2012, essentially their entire draft was just star athletes, 90th percentile type guys, relative to NFL athletes. Bobby Wagner was a star athlete, Bruce Irvin, but even down to guys like, you know, Russell Wilson, Corey Toomer, I think went in the fifth round. Almost every guy in the 2012 class was really a star athletically. And then in 2013, you had, of course, you know, the legend Christian Michael, as well as Luke Wilson, and other guys, and of course J.R. Sweezy from 2012 as well, Deshaun Shedd. It's really like if you look back historically at the last, you know, 18 years, which is what we have data for athletic testing, the Seahawks 2012 class is pretty legendary in terms of number of athletes kind of attained, and specifically number of athletes that produced significant value per pretty much any metric. So what we looked at, really, that first thing was, wow, 2012 and 2013, they took a ton of athletes. And in 2010 and 2011, there were also, you know, a significant number of athletes. And the real test, right, with hypothesis testing is, we think this is what happened. Can we predict what will happen? And in 2014, using kind of Spark methodology, as well as just analyzing general draft trends, such as, you know, player age, position, school, conference type stuff, I was able to get a fair amount of that right, down to, you know, sixth round picks like Garrett Scott, who never played because of a heart condition, but was really off the radar and expected to be an undrafted player, but went in the sixth round to the Seahawks. So once that 2014 hit, you know, and it became real, and it felt like not only are we just kind of applying this thing on to what happened in the past, which is always pretty easy to do, but we're thinking that, yes, we can start to kind of move forward and predict the things that will happen. It's, you know, it started becoming much more apparent that it was a real thing. And then also we kept hearing more and more from people who knew Pete at USC and were kind of familiar with the program, that it was something they used a lot in their recruiting there. And it was not a long shot to think that Pete Carroll was still using it. And then John Schneider, hailing from the, you know, the Al Davis, Ron Wolf tree, was also really interested in it. So the fusion of those guys, the evidence we had, and the fact that we were kind of moving forward and able to predict what they would do based on it made us pretty confident that we were onto something.
And I remember reading everything on field goals that year, and I feel like it helped get me more into the draft as someone who, you know, is a pretty casual college football fan, focused almost exclusively on UW and then maybe the Pac-12 beyond that. Like, I had no idea who Kevin Pierre-Lewis was, you know, going into the draft process. I'm not sure how many people really did, but like all of a sudden I got really excited about Kevin Pierre-Lewis and, you know, Eric Pinkins because of their Spark scores. Yeah. So I think it helped me quite a bit.
Yeah.
We're also expecting you to pick all seven rounds correctly on this podcast.
I have some bad news for you. Yeah.
How about other NFL teams in terms of, you know, what you've seen from them with Spark?
Yeah, I think the trend, and I don't think other teams necessarily use Spark, but I think as an analog for just kind of athleticism metric, you know, in generic, in aggregate, it's changed a lot since 2013. And I think to the point now where players are being drafted athletically pretty close to where that should be valued, and it's become a much more efficient market in that respect. Specifically, teams that have kind of made a change, Pittsburgh, starting in 2013-2014, took a bunch of athletes. They had an, I think, the 2013 or 2012 draft. They took Jarvis Jones, which was kind of famous because Jarvis Jones is the worst first-round athlete I have in my database. I think he was in the second or third percentile. Really, really poor athlete, and he didn't end up doing a lot in Pittsburgh. And it was funny because the next year they rebounded and suddenly took a full slate of just all athletes. And they did that for about two full years, trying to get the Jarvis Jones kind of taste out of their mouth, you know, after going through that experience. And then more recently, the team that really has hit it in a marked way is the Cowboys. So in 2015, the Seahawks had still the most athletic draft class of all 32 teams, and the Cowboys were a close second. And depending on how you created that metric, median versus mean, they actually surpassed the Seahawks. And then last year, they had the most athletic class and really started to put some distance there. And in all of their, you know, undrafted free agency decisions, guys like David Irving, who was a contributor for them last year from the edge rusher position, who's an athlete, you know, who went undrafted for personal reasons, they've started to prioritize it. And just in general, guys who I think, you know, two or three years ago would have gone in the third are kind of going more in the second, and you're starting to see it naturally sort itself out. But it's not also entirely a recent phenomenon because, like, for example, with Dalvin Cook out of Florida State this year, Dalvin Cook tested, I think, in like the ninth percentile. And even over the last 18 years, where they weren't doing a lot of athleticism metrics overall, you know, Spark wasn't a thing in 1999. But still, there's been two running backs really below average at all to be drafted in the first round. Huh. It's not a recent phenomenon that teams actually value athleticism. I just think it is a recent phenomenon to see some teams kind of make that change and really start to prioritize it and understand what value is and where it is, and the market becoming much more efficient, kind of not just for the upper tier, but as you get down, teams are taking less of a chance on the guy who's a consistent college performer who maybe isn't an NFL athlete, and trying to develop more of the guys who are pretty raw coming out of school, like a Kevin Pierre-Lewis, and see, can we make this a valuable player? And sometimes it doesn't work out like with Kevin Pierre-Lewis, but teams, I think, are tending to find it's a risk worth taking.
Are there any notable Spark success stories? I was looking through, I think your database that you have available online goes back through two drafts before this one. Are there any notable players that are Spark success stories from that era?
So I like to define, I guess, the success stories for me. I think the most fun ones are like the undrafted guys. And probably my favorite is Tyrell Williams, who played at Western Oregon. And I think he was in the 2015 class. I'm terrible at this, but I think he was 2015.
He's on the Chargers.
Yeah, he's a Chargers now. And so it's crazy because I remember his agent sent me like some clip reel in November or December of the year before. And I just got this. It was like Western Oregon. And it was like one of those tapes that you see from a high school recruit. I can't remember what the website is, but it's just super, super like Western Oregon. And you'd look at the field.
Was there music playing?
Explosions in the sky in the background?
There was music. And also the best part was looking at like the stadium. would have like barely even have a bleacher, and it was just super high school. And it's also like the 6'4" dude running 4.3, and then a bunch of 5'10" guys running after.
Yeah.
Had no chance. So I go from getting that email, and you wonder like, what if this guy is good? Why is he at Western Oregon, right? But it was really cool to see him go, not just from that video, and then to get the pro day data trickle out, and his agent, you know, DMing everybody as soon as he can that look, he ran this 4.3 whatever, and he did all this, and got pretty excited. And then I remember tracking him in undrafted free agency, and the Seahawks tried to get him, but that was the first year that a few other teams really started to kind of take the Seahawks number on that and start going after their guys in undrafted free agency. And the Chargers took the top Spark tight end and the Spark top Spark receiver, who was Tyrell Williams, from the Seahawks that year. And Tyrell Williams ended up being a pretty valuable player for the Chargers last year. And if you think about the average return of even like a fifth round pick, getting a contributor from an eighth round pick, which would I call it, you know, an undrafted free agency is an eighth round pick. It's an incredible success story. And to see a guy actually become a starter, it's even more satisfying seeing where he came from, you know, like the video of him running past the 5'10 guys, and now seeing him be on my fantasy team and, you know, scoring touchdowns is really, really satisfying.
Yes. So,
I mean, honestly, beyond that, my other favorite story is probably Deshaun Shedd, because he's a Portland guy, and he took, you know, 4 years really to become a contributor, but it's very cool to see him, you know, develop from a very raw safety who played in Big Sky to being a real NFL cornerback who, when he tore his knee, you know, it broke all of our hearts. So
yeah. The two who stood out to me just looking at the most recent data were Tyreek Hill and David Johnson, players who I know Tyreek Hill went lower because of personal issues, but who looked like their spark scores were kind of through the roof, and then have proven to be these exceptional athletes in the NFL who've stood out above everybody else.
Yeah, the David Johnson one is interesting to me. That's one of the ones where I couldn't really figure out why people didn't like him. And I mean, I certainly get my share of these evaluations wrong. Like, I do not claim to be Mr. Evaluator. I am not at all that. But with David Johnson, it seems like, I don't know, if you kind of like take draft evaluation, you put it into a bunch of buckets, and you say that teams are kind of going to pay a premium for certain things with a player, and they're going to give up on other things. So say a player could have, you know, injury, personal history could be kind of one thing you'd pay for. Age would be another. You don't want to get an overage project prospect necessarily. Kind of, you know, tape ability, kind of trait based stuff, athleticism, and then pedigree. And it seemed like David Johnson had everything really except pedigree, because he played at Northern Iowa. Yeah. And, you know, he had remarkable production on some long runs, especially. He was explosive even in college. I don't know. That's one of the ones where it just comes back, and it just seemed like he was always really, really good, and obviously a really good NFL athlete. And what we've seen is, you know, there are definitely players at smaller schools who, when they test out like an elite athlete and they have that elite production, you definitely can see that production carry across, which happens much less when that small school player kind of just isn't, you know, quote, an NFL athlete like David Johnson was. But he's definitely a personal favorite of mine, obviously significantly tempered by him playing for Bruce Arians.
All right, let's move on and take a look at this year's draft. Wanted to kind of start with a handful of players who have been, you know, prominently featured in mock drafts for the Seahawks in the first couple rounds. I think went alphabetically here. So let's start with Garrett Bowles, tackle from Utah.
Yeah, so Garrett Bowles tested out pretty well. This year is this is a very, very unathletic class in general at offensive line. So saying that he is the top performer among combine offensive linemen, he might have been eighth in a different year. So I wouldn't say he's, you know, the best athlete in the class, but he's certainly good. The one thing I'd say about him is he's a pretty peculiar prospect in that no player in the last 18 years has been drafted in the first round at tackle over like 24 and a half years old, and he's going to be 25 and a half when next year starts. So just from an age perspective, he's a huge outlier. I think even rounds 1 and 2, only one offensive lineman has been taken over 25 or 24 and a half. And I think that was Sebastian Vollmer, who plays for the Patriots out of Houston. It's incredibly rare. But I was talking about, like, you know, those buckets that teams pay for. Teams typically don't go for the really overage guys early. Mm-hmm. So it kind of speaks to the weakness of this class, that he's being talked about going higher, because there's been plenty of older players throughout, you know, the last 18 years, but they just tend to fall behind the guys who are 2 years younger. And you do see, I mean, to some extent, you can give a little more of a break to like an offensive lineman, because they do tend to, you know, play longer than like a DB. But it still is.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to hear you say that, because I feel like through a lot of the traditional draft sources, we've heard that this is a really bad offensive line draft. So I'm interested to hear that that also plays out in Spark.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the correlation's pretty strong. Like when we had the great wide receiver class in 2014, we had a great athletic class in 2014. Mm-hmm. This year we have the great defensive back class, and they're all great athletes. So typically when you have, you know, everyone's excited about a class like last year's D-line, this year's DBs, 2014's wide receivers, you do end up seeing kind of a clump of athletic testing around there. Pretty rarely do you see them all kind of fail the bar together. It's fairly irregular. It does happen, you know, and there are really good players who end up not testing well. But typically when you have the star class, it just ends up that you have a bunch of really fun athletes too.
Yeah. What about a couple of the other linemen who are linked to the Seahawks in those rounds, with Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin and Cam Robinson out of Alabama?
Yeah. So Ryan Ramczyk didn't test out because he's got a bad hip, which I guess makes him the perfect Seahawk, considering they now only like to take players who have been hurt.
Well, sure. You're just saying that because the 49ers changed GMs.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yes. The Seahawks like to take the guys who are like, you know, are wounded. The 49ers like to take the guys who are emotionally dead.
So, yes.
Yes. Different by degree, but similar. I don't know. Ryan Ramczyk, I'm not qualified to judge like offensive line tape deep every day, but it's certainly interesting that he just has the hip. The Seahawks last year kind of, like, I think five of the guys they took had incomplete testing data because of injury. They had Vanette, Odhiambo. I can't remember all of them, but essentially they took a bunch of guys who were hurt. So if they think they have some kind of sports science advantage and they can rehabilitate these guys, and that's kind of their next frontier of where they're going to get the competitive advantage, not people are catching up on testing. I guess Ryan Ramczyk could be the choice, but a hip is pretty scary. Cam Robinson from Alabama is kind of a slightly below average athlete. It's not bad. He's certainly not, you know, a few other like Kwanjo who came out of Alabama a few years ago, who's a really poor athlete. It's a little worrisome though, because he seems to fill kind of all the things the Seahawks like that don't necessarily make good players and offensive linemen. Like the Seahawks like to lean on guys, you know, and have them be strong, and they kind of like that profile. But it seems like every time they take that guy, we end up disappointed because they take this, you know, massive mountain of a person. So it's not even just him. It's the fact that he kind of seems to represent the things that make us not good at evaluation. It makes me pretty tentative.
Although I don't think he played any other sports at Alabama, correct? He yes. did play football the whole time.
How did Jermaine Ifedi a year ago rank spark-wise?
So Jermaine Ifedi was a pretty good athlete. So he was, I think he was a little above league average, but I wouldn't call him anything, you know, sudden or explosive. I think those would be bad words for him.
Let's move on and take a look at, you know, you mentioned the, we talked earlier about the great defensive back class. That's obviously a place that is a need for the Seahawks because of the aforementioned shed injury and, you know, the lack of depth in terms of outside players there. So, you know, I think the, probably the two most common names in the first round, Kevin King from Washington and then Marlon Humphrey from Alabama.
Well, I have some personal feelings on that, obviously, that I'll try to temper, but I'm a big Kevin King fan.
I think we all do here. Yeah. That's pretty common.
Yeah. I remember when we were in 2014 and we were first doing it, the Huskies do that junior day every year, and they actually publish the results, unlike a lot of teams. And I remember seeing the Kevin King results come up, and I was like, oh, there's no way that's real. And I have tweets. I've looked up tweets from this that, you know, me back in 14 and 15, like dubious of the Kevin King numbers, but it turns out that they actually were pretty much right on.
And he's so this Kevin King didn't surprise you this year at the combine as much as he might've surprised other people.
No, I think there was like a solid bunch of people in Seahawks Twitter who had been like religiously following. And by solid, I mean like six people who have been like following these Kevin King results. He's been putting up NFL numbers since he was 19 at these combines. Wow. And by the way, and tweeting about it. He would always let
Kevin King
know.
Is tweeting about it.
Oh, he would definitely love the junior day numbers. He loved his results there. Yeah. So anyway, as a prospect, he is one of like the best 10 quarterback prospects that we've had in the last 20 years. It's not just that he's really athletic. He's historically athletic. He's also going to be barely 22 when the year starts. So for a 4-year player, he's really not overaged. You also see that a lot of times these star testers are like 24. You see a pretty good correlation between age and testing. So it's not even just he's some overaged guy who is, you know, just lives in the gym. He's a really, really good athlete in addition to being the coordinated guy. So, and personally, it's really hard for me, right, to like separate the fan part of this because I love Kevin King. So I honestly cannot really give an unbiased, unvarnished opinion on him ever. I mean, I would love him to be a Seahawk.
We don't want that.
Yeah, we're not looking for that.
Just yeah, be okay, that's good.
I found
I'm
my
like
audience.
Fanning myself over here, hearing you talk about Kevin King.
Yeah, I think you might need to go smoke a cigarette or something
to regress my excitement to the mean. Two quick questions about Kevin King for you. And by percentage chances of these things happening, question number one, what do you think the chances are that Kevin King gets to the Seahawks with their pick in the first round? Question number two is, should he get to the Seahawks, what do you think the chances are that they would draft him?
So I was talking to someone about this week. I need to answer the second one first, cause I don't think they're going to take him.
Interesting.
The Seahawks, they don't like the shop at Bell Square, right? When they're looking for clothes, their clothes being defensive backs here, I still believe they think Value Village is fine because they can go find that deal. So I have a real trouble believing they're going to suddenly break the bank and go with a first round pick on a DB. I actually hope they do. And I wanted them to take a DB earlier in 15 and 16. Because they've kind of stopped investing in defensive backs altogether and we're working through it now. And now they're kind of 28, 29 years old. We're getting up there. Maybe it's just protecting my heart because I wanted to get him and be a Seahawk, but I really just, I still find it tough. I do think there's like a 60% chance he's there though. I don't actually think he goes that high yet. And part of that's because the class is so deep with athletes, especially, you know, guys like, I don't know, Humphrey, pretty much everybody in the class that they talk about at corner is also great. Like Conley, Gary and Conley at Ohio State, they're all really good athletes. So it's not like the team needs to kind of jump on Kevin King to get themselves an athletic guy. So I guess I would say I think he's kind of there, but I think they kind of don't take him. And again, that could just be me trying to protect myself.
The
hope would just be too great. Yeah.
All right. What about Humphrey?
Yeah, Humphrey's interesting. So something else I do too is not just think about, you know, what their athletic percentile is, but kind of look at the player and try to understand not just what the overall number is, but, you know, is it the kind of athletic profile that's been successful before? Is there kind of a trend? And sometimes what you'll see is, you know, a guy like Tyler Lockett, who's kind of just an average run-of-the-mill NFL athlete. But when you actually run the numbers, there's kind of a lot of guys around his general height, weight, agility versus speed versus explosion. And you can kind of see like, oh, you know, maybe he's an average athlete, but you do see a lot of those guys succeed. There's a role that kind of aligns with that. And Humphrey definitely has some, you know, some comps do pop up. He's also like a, you know, a Sigma athlete, which is 83rd percentile. And I think people look at the rankings and they think that I would value the players kind of as the rankings go. But, you know, being a one Sigma NFL athlete is pretty good because this isn't relative to NFL prospects, right? This is relative to the NFL population as a whole. So he's also 21 when the season starts, 21.1. So he won't even be 21 when he's drafted. So personally, I really like to isolate the age guys. I think the 21-year-old players in the first round are a really great bargain. Actually, there's a stat. I don't know the exact specifics of it, but 21-year-old players with a Sigma plus athletic percentile athletic result taken in the first round have an incredibly high success rate. Basically, if you're really young and really athletic and you're good enough to go in first, you tend to be pretty good. And that's a thing that I really look at. So, I mean, I would love to see Kevin King, but I would also love to see another player who's also athletic and young, hopefully getting that second contract at, 24, 25.
Can you explain to the listener what you mean by a Sigma athlete, or then the famed Three Sigma athlete in the name of the website?
And I think I misspoke there. I think I said one Sigma was 83rd percentile. I think it's 85th percentile. Just I know no one cares about that, and your listener is not interested. But
all of our listeners are not concerned.
Yeah, I do want to make sure I get that right for my own well-being. So really, I guess it could, how far back we want to go, but a normal distribution is assumed kind of in human population. And you could explain this much better than I could, but effectively, people's height kind of works in a distribution in so there's very few Yao Mings and there's very few Muggsy Bogues, but there's a lot of people who are, right in the middle, who are 5'10", 5'11", 6 foot. And so you see that the mean, which is the average for those who are more in line with that terminology, there's a lot of people right around there. And then as you go further from the mean, there are fewer and fewer people who kind of exist in that population. So what I do athletically is I normalize each position. So I say for an NFL cornerback, this is the average overall spark for that player. And then I look at a distribution and I make that normal distribution. So I say when a player is one sigma from the mean, that means they are a standard deviation above average for that position in the NFL. And then because people have no idea what one standard deviation means, I convert that to a percentile. So when we say a player is one standard deviation above the mean, that means they are in the 85th percentile of NFL athletes. And that means that 15% of NFL athletes are more athletic and 85% are less athletic. And that kind of gives you an idea how to gauge it. And so the further you get from the mean, you get to these higher and higher Z-scores, obviously. And once you get to a 3, there are very, very few players who have qualified for it over the last 18 years. When I made the site in 2015, I decided to name it Three Sigma Athlete because kind of the rarity. And it was kind of cool to kind of set that bar and see if anyone would clear it each year. And it's kind of a fun thing in the combine because it's a running thing on Twitter. But really, a Three Sigma Athlete is a 99.8th percentile, I guess. And it means a player is 3 standard deviations above the average for that position among the NFL peers. And so when I ran it a few years ago, go on.
Does anybody clear that bar this year?
Well, it's funny you ask. I have not commented on this on Twitter yet, but UConn safety, I'm going to get this wrong every time for the next year. Obi Melifonwu. I'm going with that. Melifonwu. Okay, this is a disaster. Obi. He I have no hope of saying Obi's last name. There's some debate about one of his test numbers because of the pro day numbers. He didn't do a full test battery at the combine, and pro day numbers are kind of hard to get a full read on. But tonight and tomorrow morning, I am working on researching that and updating the database fully. And I think there is a real good chance he ends up being the 5th active Three Sigma athlete in the NFL. Evan Mathis just retired, I think, officially. So I think he's off the list now. But I think Obi probably gets there.
You have to tell us the other 4 also.
Wait, is Evan Mathis the only one who's commented about this on Twitter, right?
Yes. I think the first day of my website, somebody tweeted at him and he was very proud to be one of the 4.
Okay.
At the time, I think it was Evan Mathis, Calvin Johnson, Lane Johnson, the Eagles tackle, and J.J. Watt.
I've heard of that guy. Yeah.
those are the 4 Three Sigmas. So, and they're, 4 pretty good players. And then we had Calvin and Evan have now retired. We had 2 years ago, I think, Byron Jones hit Three Sigma at corner out of UConn, who the Cowboys took in their kind of, new analytics-based production testing, everything that they're doing. And then weirdly, I don't know what they're feeding the UConn DBs, but yeah. I think Obi is the next guy here.
Where does he fall in mock drafts right now?
He is being mocked to the Seahawks pretty frequently, right on that late first.
Interesting.
Oh, well.
That'll be interesting to watch. All right, let's round off the list of guys that I had seen mocked to the Seahawks. At defensive tackle, we have Malik McDowell from Michigan State.
Yeah, he is kind of the essence of an average NFL athlete. I'm going to check his age here before I comment on it, but I'm pretty sure he is a younger guy. He's only 21. And so as an average athlete at 21, you can kind of implicitly add a little bit. The younger guys typically don't test quite as well. Certainly there's nothing athletically holding him back. This is another one where people are really split on him online because of the attitude stuff. And so, like, I know I missed on Rashid Hageman. Bad with names, but the guy out of Rashid, that's correct. Rashid.
Out of Minnesota?
Out of Minnesota in 2014, the Falcons took. And I think he actually had some good moments then last year under Dan Quinn's tutelage, but kind of a similar dude where, you know, Big Ten, you know, fairly, he was much more athletic, but, you know, kind of on and off and would have an iffy motor. And so when you take that guy, I mean, you could end up with a pretty good player, but you could also end up with Sheed, who I think on Hard Knocks was mostly remembered for being excited about the aquarium, if I recall. Like, that was the only notable thing he did.
I just remember Brian Cox yelling at him a lot.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
All right, and then a couple of edge rushers who might fall into the kind of the weak side linebacker spot in the Bruce Irvin role that the Seahawks have been looking to fill since his departure. Tyus Bowser from Houston, and then TJ Watt from Wisconsin.
Yeah. So TJ Watt, pretty athletic too. He ended up, he's not quite as big as his brother. He's 6'4", 250 instead of 300. I think JJ tests around like 290 or something. So definitely a bigger guy. But both of them are really good athletes. And in general, it's a really, really athletic edge class. This year, we have 23 edges in the database right now who are 50th percentile or above relative to NFL athletes. And in a lot of years, we'd be lucky to have 10. So overall, there's great depth there. And I don't think you've even counted Myles Garrett yet in that list because of incomplete testing. But for Tyus Bowser specifically, it's pretty interesting. I will say that one thing that gives me pause with him is that I talk about, you know, kind of running through past guys with similar profiles for Tyus Bowser. And you do see, when you kind of look at the similar athletes to him, a lot of pretty meh players like Barkevius Mingo, Shaq Riddick, Jackson Jeffcoat. And there are some names in there like Leonard Floyd. And it's not anything that would keep me from looking at him. But the question I would ask if I was actually evaluating him as the Seahawks is, say, like, what makes him different than these guys who are kind of athletic and similar but didn't work out? Because, yeah, he's athletic. But if there's something that we have kind of are prone to missing, and maybe it's a role thing, maybe it's trying to cast, you know, too small of a guy, maybe a tween or whatever it is, we want to really make sure we know why we were wrong on Jackson Jeffcoat before we jump into Tyus Bowser. But if they decide that, yes, there's a reason that we do believe he is different than these other guys we've liked in the past, you know, who didn't work out, I'd be okay with it, certainly. He's really just a really great athlete with kind of all the numbers you want out of an edge guy, with a really good three cone, pretty agile, good burst with a 10 split, and pretty explosive too with the jumps. And overall, just like a, you know, I think he's nearly a 90th. Yeah, he's a 91st percentile athlete. And then TJ Watt, actually a fairly similar athlete with some better comps. You know, his guys tend to be a little bit better on the NFL stage, but he's a 93rd percentile athlete. So both those guys are super elite. And there's also Hassan Reddick, Jordan Willis, who are kind of won't go super early, I don't think, and might be more in the Seahawks range. I think Reddick's been kind of shooting up a little bit more recently, but Willis is probably more of like a second round guy, and you could kind of get a first round athlete there. But the real great thing here is that there's incredible depth, just like with the defensive backs. So the Seahawks should be able to get, you know, with their pretty extensive list of second round picks. I mean, they're going to have however many they have now plus two when they trade down in the first. So they should be able to get a bunch. They should be able to get, you know, at least an edge and a corner.
I've successfully predicted 2 out of the 3 years the Seahawks draft pick would be a quarterback that someone else would trade into that pick for.
Yes, that is a great bet.
It's a pretty safe guess. Is there anybody else we're forgetting in this range?
For that first round pick?
Yeah.
I mean, again, personally, I'm very Kevin King-centric here. So, yes. Like, personally, I spend most of my days hoping for him. But in all honesty, I think that the best moves in this class are probably at edge or DB. I think they've invested a lot in the receiving options typically, and I'd like to see more even distribution of the offensive line. But if I were going to be irresponsible and just break out the credit card and spend more on offense, if Chris Godwin was around like in the late first, I think he'd be a great fit with Wilson with the kind of, you know, ball they play. That would be awesome. And then like Zay Jones out of East Carolina would also be pretty interesting. I think both those guys are going to go earlier than 26, and the Seahawks probably should not invest in another receiver considering they have a pretty extensive core already. But, you know, I mean, I can be tempted. And if they take Obi or Kevin King, I'll be pretty excited.
I'm pretty excited about this Obi option also.
Yeah.
So if you had to make
only for the memes, honestly, because the Obi Wan Kenobi memes would be pretty fantastic for like at least the next 4 years.
It's natural.
Yeah.
If you had to make one prediction of what you think the Seahawks will do, aside from trading down, if you could choose one player who you think they're most likely to draft with that pick, who do you think that would be?
In the first, I really do think that Cam Robinson is their kryptonite. And I think it'll be very hard for them to resist the exact kind of player that Tom Cable likes to lean against. So if I
had Carpenter 2.0, or I guess
he's kind of like this unholy like he's kind of this combination of like Carpenter and Fetty. So
how about later in the draft in terms of guys who look very Seahawksy that, you know, kind of would make sense in later rounds?
Right. So the Seahawks, I think people have probably caught on a bit, are really into the arm length too with corners. So one thing you can always do if you want to find a Seahawk is kind of scroll through, find the really good athlete who's also a really good corner or has a good arm length, and kind of figure out from there who they're going to be interested in. Like, for example, Humphrey has the 32 arms. So he's kind of, you know, right in that range. One that kind of fits what they like to do that I think would be pretty interesting is Brian Allen out of Utah. Now, I think, I can't remember if he's, I get these names, I get the corners, there's too many corners, but he kind of seems like a guy, a little overaged, but he's 6'3", 215, 87th percentile athlete, has 34-inch arms with a 79 wingspan, which is kind of like Brandon Browner size. Mm-hmm. And he teams that up with like really impressive short agility and stuff, and it kind of seems like the kind of guy that they've taken in the past. They really like the guys who are, you know, around kind of a Sigma athlete, that's, you know, 80th percentile or so, who have the arm length. It's certainly exciting to see that. I definitely want to see a lot of investment in the DBs. At other positions in kind of in the middle rounds, I like Derek Rivers out of Youngstown State, who is a 6'4", 250 edge, who tested pretty well there, who kind of, you know, I want to find guys who are not really first round price, and with a class this deep athletically, you're going to get some guys in the third or fourth round that you might not in another year. And, you know, offensive line wise, I'm just really hoping not to take Cam Robinson traditionally. And then
I'm still unclear how you feel about him.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, it's really tough to tell, right? It's pretty ambiguous. And then the guy I really like, that I'm a little frustrated with the Seahawks, so they took Vanette last year in the third round, the tight end from Ohio State, because last year was a really poor tight end class, and they spent a third on him, did nothing with him. You know, and he's not a young prospect either. And then this year, it's a really, really good tight end class. There's tons of depth. I like George Kittle out of Iowa, who is a 6'4", 250 tight end who tested really well. He's actually not up on the site yet because of incomplete testing, but I think he will be by tomorrow. And he's probably going to be about an 85th percentile athlete. He comes from Iowa, so he's really an all-around tight end. He's not an Evan Ingram who played at Ole Miss, who's really more of a wide receiver who's 230 playing tight end. He's an actual tight end, more in the, you know, lighter Zach Miller mold. And I think that's really interesting, right? Combined with the Seahawks like, which is that ability to block and with some really exceptional athleticism, almost like a Luke Wilson, but with real, you know, much more skill exhibited at the college level, because he's a really solid receiver and blocker at Iowa. I think of all the third round picks, I'd probably be most excited to see him in the third, really? But yeah.
There's just so many tight ends already on the roster, but I could see them bringing him in to compete and maybe push somebody like Vanette out.
And Vinette's the only guy under contract for beyond next season.
Yeah,
exactly. And Jimmy Graham's getting older. He has the knee surgery in his past. I considering how deep the class is this year and how rare a good tight end year is to be able to get a pretty good player in the third, fourth rounds, I would not be shocked to see them do it, considering how many picks they have there.
Anybody else deeper than that, sixth, seventh round, or undrafted?
Yeah. So this is my favorite to hear. Right. To be honest, I mean these early picks are, you know, get a little boring. Everyone has these mock drafts. But what you want to hear about is Matt Breda, you know, Georgia Southern running back.
Okay.
This is the guy I've been talking. Do you know Chris Brown on Twitter, Smart Football?
So of course.
He apparently watches Georgia Southern. I do not watch a lot of Georgia Southern. I know it's shocking, right? I'm busy watching like Kevin King highlight videos, but other people watch Georgia Southern, and Matt Breda was really productive the last 2 years. And then apparently they switched scheme this last year and he wasn't as productive. So he's kind of off the radar, but he currently is the top testing running back with 95th percentile.
Really?
He's only 5'9", 195. So he's not quite, you know, the bruiser the Seahawks look for, but in terms of finding a pretty good camp body, who's probably much better than Tremaine Pope, and has some actual ability and a really good college track record of success in ways that, you know, analytically have been shown, you know, market share of team yards and things like that, that have a real correlation to NFL success. I'm pretty excited about him. And I kind of hope the Seahawks do make that a seventh round, you know, priority undrafted free agent type pickup. That's probably the one that pops to the top of my head.
Your face lit up when he said Tremaine Pope.
Yeah. Well, you lost some of our listeners with the better than Tremaine Pope. You lost some people then.
I'm going to get thrown out of Seahawks Twitter, but it's all
worth it. Mina Kimes for sure is going to have some unkind words.
Gone.
What about some of the Northwest players who are in the draft this year? We talked about Kevin King a little bit extensively, but some of the other Huskies who are around, John Ross.
Yeah, John Ross is fast.
testing for that.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the ones where we don't really talk about percentile because we all saw him run. So it's almost a little redundant. I'm gonna go a different direction here. We were talking about guys late in the draft, and then you mentioned Washington. Have you heard of Samson Ebukam?
No.
I'm gonna go with no. So he's an Eastern Washington player who is a pass rusher who is actually the top testing edge rusher in the entire class.
Really?
Fascinating.
Yes. So small school guy. He's actually not overage, which you often see from the smaller school guys. You know, they're 23, 24 when they come in. He's 22 when the season starts, and he's pretty young. So I'm pretty excited to see if the Seahawks bring him in, because they have a history of bringing in the in-state guys as camp bodies.
Yeah.
But in terms of the state guys, you got John Ross, who tested really well. Cooper Kupp and Gabe Marks also did. And I think Cooper Kupp tested around like the 35th percentile, which is really good for him. And in terms of, you know, the floor that you kind of need to hit, that NFL players typically are more athletic than, you know, probably about the 10th or 15th percentile. He certainly is above that and has the tremendous college production to go along with it.
Very productive.
Gabe Marks is probably the opposite side of that, where he's really productive, but he tested out so poorly that it's very tough to find, you know, there's a few receivers in the last 18 years who have been productive with that kind of athleticism, and they all play for the Patriots. I'm not sure like how projectable that is in you know, overall.
We talked about the deep tight end class here. Where does Darrell Daniels fit into that?
Yeah, I think it's the wrong year for him to be a draft prospect, right? Because he tested out, you know, in a normal year, he might pop a little bit because he's a league average tight end athlete, but in this class, he kind of got buried. And it's really hard to see him getting a lot of traction because there are just so many options above him.
And then Elijah Qualls on the D-line from the Huskies?
Yeah, Elijah Qualls tested out pretty well. Kind of a, I don't know, just a guy, you know, pretty good athlete, 30th percentile, nothing truly tremendous, but also didn't test out that poorly. So he tested out certainly to the point where he's going to get a pretty good shot with somebody. But it would be, I would be surprised to see him go too high. I would be, you know, he's not certainly going to jump on the base of his combine stuff. But again, he tested out well enough that he certainly isn't, you know, disqualified by some horrible testing or anything. And I think the Huskies also had a few other guys that were pretty good in the secondary this year beyond, you know, the Kevin King experience.
I've heard that.
Specifically Sidney Jones and Buda Baker, who are not quite Kevin King athletically.
I love that we're talking about Kevin King. Like, I can't, could not have imagined during this entire season that the person we'd be talking to going into the draft the most from the Huskies secondary would be Kevin King.
Well, he's an item with Kelsey Plum, right?
Is that a thing?
Oh, wow.
I feel like that's like the coolest couple in the state. Like, I mean, I can't really think of anyone else that's competitive even, so.
We'd have to go back to Marcus Tuiasosopo and now Megan Franza, was it? I'm blanking on that.
I mean, Ciara and Russell Wilson do maybe live in the state.
that's a very strong quiz.
Well, I mean, apparently someone's down on Seahawks Twitter because the new rumors these days are that they are building a house down in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, so no.
Might want to catch up on that, yeah. Just
FYI. Man, he's going to be the Rams quarterback in no time.
with Pete Carroll coaching.
Yes. Yep. But yeah, Sidney Jones and Buda Baker, they tested out fine. You know, they're like just a little below league average. Certainly not anything to worry about. Buda Baker specifically had, you know, kind of, there are definitely some players kind of his type that are testing right on there and were perfectly successful. Sidney Jones, you know, he's kind of so average athletically from an NFL perspective that similarities aren't really going to do anything for you, because you could very easily look at it and say he's just a guy, or you could say he's Asante Samuel. It's kind of in that range where it doesn't really mean anything. But certainly neither of them disqualified themselves. And I think there's kind of an axiom I go by with this testing, is that you can't like look at the top of the charts and say it's the best player, look at the bottom and say it's the worst player. But you can generally say that like really great players are typically great athletes, just in general. Calvin Johnson is typically really good. J.J. Watt's typically a really good athlete. You know, very, very few poor athletes are good players. So that's kind of where you go, right? Do they hit a certain floor, at which point I'm not going to take them because they're just too bad of an athlete and the odds are too poor? And then are they a really, really strong athlete, because those have a history, you know, especially taken early, those really young, great athletes are typically the guys that end up being like the historically great Hall of Fame players. So neither one of them disqualified themselves, and they should go, you know, right around where they were going to go before the combine without too much of an effect either way.
Well, it was certainly some effect of the athletic testing for Sidney Jones.
Yes.
Well,
that's a unique one. Yes.
Did you have any thoughts if we were to talk? So can we put a bow on the draft? Is that it? Sure. Is that what's going to happen?
I think we did it. That's it.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk really quickly here about the Seahawks offseason, because we've been talking about these moves as they've been happening. But I'm curious to hear at least on maybe one or two of them, how you would judge the Seahawks offseason moves spark wise. In particular, I'm curious about Deion Jordan, Luke Jokel, and Eddie Lacy. And then also how you feel to settle a debate between us about 1 year contracts.
Okay, well,
there's a lot there.
I have some strong takes on the 1 year contract. So I have where this comes down. Can I start with Deion Jordan? Are we good with that? I think out of the 19 part question, I will try to parse my way through one at a time. So Deion Jordan was an interesting case. He was taken in 2013 Miami, obviously out of Oregon, as a rusher, and is kind of used as the canonical case for like why testing is kind of not the be all end all. But the funny thing is that by testing,
he replaced Mike Mamula.
Yes. Yeah. Well, for those of us who don't know who Mike Mamula is, of course, you know, Deion Jordan is for a new generation. Yep. It's funny, Deion Jordan, like he got this reputation for testing so well, but he really didn't test that well. So he's definitely an above average athlete. He's like 70th percentile or something, but he's not some all conquering, you know, hero who went and did what Obi or Kevin King did. So he's definitely a good athlete. But if you like look at his profile, it's a bunch of guys who didn't do a ton in the league either. Out of his first, I don't know, I have a database that with a ton of guys here. And out of his first, you know, 25 or 30 similarities, there's really no NFL players pop up that significantly. He falls in kind of this, I don't know, uncanny valley between linebackers and edge, where it's just not enough of either to really be that successful. Kind of like Marcus Smith, who the Eagles took in 2014 in the first round. If the Seahawks can kind of put him in that Irvin role and make him successful, as a tweener, which they did successfully before, maybe it's possible, but he certainly is not some tremendous athlete, excuse me, beyond everything that he somehow gets a reputation for. Jokel is kind of a league average athlete, which is fairly irregular. Typically, first round tackles are super good athletes, and it was definitely weird to see someone go that early with kind of average testing league wise. And then Eddie Lacy is a bad tester and is historically one of the worst running backs to ever put up a good season.
Interesting.
Really?
Yes. He, really? He's, a, he's up there with like Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Jeremy Hill.
You know, the other guy I was curious about that the Seahawks added this offseason, obviously not at the same level as some of these guys, but was Cyril Grayson, the track star from LSU that they signed as a wide receiver based on his pro day.
Yeah, I don't think I saw his numbers come across yet because he didn't qualify as in the class, and people don't care enough to report his data. I think his track times compare pretty favorably to other guys. You can kind of extrapolate how he's going to do. I will say I'm pretty dubious about any athlete that comes in without football experience.
Yes.
Because if you look at like the numbers for any given year, there are 280 O linemen from D3 schools who test really well. There are a lot of guys who play at schools that are not football players as much as they are athletes. Like Odell Beckham's cousin last year, like barely played in college, and he was like touting himself as some running up great testing. So I will say I'm fairly tempered on the Cyril Grayson thing personally.
Okay. And what about those 1 year contracts? Because I'm curious about your hot takes.
I just feel like you're kind of limiting your upside. I mean, if we really want to go for the comp picks, that's fine. But like with Jokel specifically, I think I feel the most strongly. But so let's say everything goes great with Jokel and he's a really good player. Coming off the injury, considering the upside is that he's really good and he leaves. And then a year later, you get probably a fourth round pick is about the best you could expect. Potentially a third, but it's probably a fourth. And once you consider the time value of draft picks, it's really a fifth round pick because for every year you can depreciate it by a round. So you've paid $8 million. You have a whole next season you have to replace, and you probably can't re-sign him. So if it was a thing where you're going to take the risk on a guy and pay him a pretty big first-year salary coming off the triple knee tear, I would definitely like to see a little more something built in, whether it's future non-guaranteed years, kind of in line with what trying to think what the player was. There was a guy recently who had a similar situation. Anyway, you can kind of tack on non-guaranteed years or something to at least give yourself an upside. By limiting it to 1 year, it does feel like you're giving yourself a pretty significant downside, which is he's coming off a triple knee tear and he's not good until late in the season, maybe. And he doesn't really have a great track record of being productive anyway. So with an $8 million deal, I feel a little tentative about that structure, I guess. For the guys that are less expensive, like Abushi or whatever, I guess I'm less concerned because it's kind of irrelevant. Those guys filter in and out of the league and teams every year. But for a big money guy like Jokel, maybe it's just the market, but it's questionable to me that they don't have any future thing locked up and he could just leave after 1 year and they're in the same position again.
That sounds a lot like my analysis.
It's basically the same.
I agree with it wholeheartedly.
It sounds like best case scenario for the Seahawks is that Luke Jokel is kind of bad at the beginning of the year and maybe plays a little bit more competently by the end of the year and they can get him on kind of a steal long term.
Yeah.
Or you just have one great season, just like blaze of glory with Luke Jokel, and then he signs with the Raiders.
Right. Can we just get, I mean, I understand that comp picks are important and that good teams do them, but I can run through my database and like look up successful players who are comp picks, and there's not many. Like late round picks are a crapshoot, right? We want to have as many as possible, draft as many players as possible, and it works out better for you. But I don't know. I get tired when we're talking about like free agency and like maximizing the comp picks 2 years away. It's so convoluted that if you're trying to build your team through comp picks that long term, it's more of a cherry on top than something you really strategize specifically and change your entire offseason for. So I'm a little less rosy on that than some people, I think.
It's not exactly the process.
No. If the process was like the 50th overall pick, then.
I mean, it was the first year when Sam Pinky was trading Spencer Hawes and Evan Turner for second round picks. So maybe that is a reasonable comparison.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've gotten to the obligatory NBA comparison, and I think on that note, it is a good time to thank you for joining us.
And where can people find you your work on Twitter?
Well, such as it is, my work has been pretty limited this year because of other things going on. So I have scraped enough time to get the rankings posted pretty much and done very little writing. But I will be tweeting about the draft specifically over the next week, especially during the draft, at ZJ Whitman. And then at the site 3sigmaathlete.com, you can see all the rankings, and we will have an updated rankings hopefully this weekend. And on Monday, I hopefully will be putting together an induction post for the newest 3 Sigma athlete.
All right. Awesome.
That's always an exciting moment. All right. Thanks for your time and thanks for listening.
Thanks.